brought to you by Black Knight. It's the technology.ie podcast, episode 39 for August 10th, 2012, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinichon. Dias Mariva, Kith Fortra Vishtak, hello and welcome to technology.ie, the podcast. It's at that website as well. My name's Conor Muinichon. I'm in the RCB 94.8 FM studios in Kilkee, County Clare. And on the internet, we've got Black Knight CEO Michaela Nealon. Good evening, Michaela.
Good evening, Conor. How's it going?
It's good. And yourself?
Not bad.
You're in Carlo again this week.
I am. I'm sorry. I'm really boring at the moment. I haven't been anywhere interesting recently.
Have you got a trip coming up?
I've got a bunch of things coming up in September, October, possibly November, probably something in December. So far for the month of August, the only trip that I definitely have plans, I've even bought the tickets, is a personal trip. And we mentioned before, I'll go over to London for the James Bond exhibition.
Oh, that's right, yeah, yeah.
Might have something else between now and then, but I haven't decided whether I'll go yet.
Well, if you fancy a few days by the sea, I've got to recommend West Clare now at the moment because it is absolutely gorgeous today. What kind of temperatures did you hit in Carlow today?
We have a house in West Clare.
Pardon?
We have a house in West Clare. Of course we do.
We have what?
We have a house in West Clare.
Oh, you do, is right. Well, definitely I recommend it in this weather. What was the temperature like today in Carlow?
I actually don't know. I had to put on the air conditioning in my office, but then again, the problem, of course, is with a flat roof and everything else, at times you've no idea whether it's hot or cold outside because it can get very, very hot with all the computers and everything else anyway.
Yeah.
It was warm enough.
It can be like that here today. We've got a lot to talk about today. We've got lots happened this week technology-wise. The Curiosity rover landed on Mars and something very impressive, but it wasn't actually that impressive when you tuned in to watch it live. But we'll talk about that in a while. But of course, the big spectacle from an Irish point of view, and we're recording this on Thursday evening, the 9th of August, and the country has gone giddy and delirious with Katie Taylor fever.
Sorry, had to do it.
Thanks for that, Michaela. That's the Rocky music. It's very appropriate. That's you're playing that, of course, on your end this evening. Did you watch it?
Of course I did. Not only did I watch it, pretty much all my entire staff watched it.
And did
we,
you...
We basically shut up shop for the duration of the match.
Well, did you, Michaela, did you stand around or sit in front of a traditional television set, or did you try to watch a live stream in this age of digital communications?
Live stream, of course. We don't have a TV in the office.
Well, you see, this is it, and this is what I was thinking since the days of Italian 90 and God knows what else. We don't generally tend to have TVs in offices nowadays, and we tend to rely on live streams and LCD displays, and that's all good and well. But it didn't work for us today here in this office, Michaela. Did it work for you?
I did, but I mean, the problem that a lot of people had was if you could get onto the RTE live stream before it got busy, you were fine. But if you tried to get on close to the, I don't know, what is it? It's a kickoff for a football match. What is it when they start in boxing? Is it gloves up? I don't know what the term is.
It's a throw in Gaelic games, but throw in boxing is a totally different thing. It means throwing in the towel.
Once you got closer to a quarter to five, forget it. Nobody could get onto the streams.
Well, what happened here was, based on the experience people had with the semi-final and I think the previous bout that she had done two, I think, at that stage. Based on that experience, this office emptied out from about 4:30 onwards and people headed down the town to pubs and places like that to watch the match. I stayed here, two of us stayed here in the office and tried to get on the RT stream. We succeeded, Michaela, and we watched, we got on, it took a while, but we got on in the middle of the second round. round, and we got to see round two, round three, and most of round four. There was about 45 seconds to go, Michele, and then it completely collapsed and died. And I immediately tried to get back on, took a look at Twitter, and I got the impression that from what people were tweeting, that some other people had experienced something similar to myself at around the same time. It was very unfortunate because, of course, it was really a sort of down to the last minute and no great certainty as to who had actually won the match. Even Katie herself doubted her success, and there was that tense moment before the result was announced.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you could see that if you're watching it. I mean, we've got a lot of bandwidth into the office, and I'm not sure of the exact figures yet. Hopefully I'll have them tomorrow. But I think at one stage we were doing 35 megabits inbound to the office at peak, and that was pretty much just watching the stream. I mean, that was a constant 35 megabits. That's pretty much the entire office watching the match live.
I favorited a tweet just for reference, so I'd find it again. Somebody else was looking at, oh yeah, there was some figures from HEANet. Brian Nisbet, who's at Natural20 on Twitter, had some data. HEANet, which is the Higher Education Authority, basically it's students and lecturers and people like that watching in colleges. They peaked at over 3 gigabits per second on the RTE stream via level 3, it says. I think people were interested, and he has some data in relation to that. What did you say that you clocked, Michele, again?
Just in our office, 35 megabits or thereabouts.
Right.
I mean, we've got 100 meg completely uncontended fibre into the office. So, you know, 35 megabit constant is, you know, quite a bit of traffic.
It's not surprising given the interest that Katie Taylor has generated. You've been documenting or making note of some of that. You've just put a post on technology.ie of the Twitter reaction to Katie's win from around the world.
Yeah, I mean, this was one of the things that was really fascinating. I mean, it's something I've been discussing with a couple of people over the last couple of days. You know, the media, the public, we're so behind her, but not just in Ireland. I mean, Samuel L. Jackson, the movie star, all of Ireland, raise a pint for Katie Taylor's gold medal, Russian beatdown, Pop George Edward, the Irish Defence Forces in South Lebanon tweeted a photo, ESPN Olympics, the Irish support of boxer Katie Taylor was unbelievable, one of the best moments in the London Games, Piers Morgan, for singing their anthem louder than anyone at the Olympics, the amazing Irish crowd at Katie Taylor ceremony deserve £1,000 to Great Ormond Street. And then Nick Clegg, congratulations to Katie Taylor on her hard-fought gold. Crowd packed with Irish fans. Unbelievable atmosphere. I mean, if you're watching it live, I mean, you'd almost have felt sorry for the Russian, because, I mean, the crowd was dominated by the Irish, and they were way louder than any of the other fans.
That's a fact. I'm just looking up on Twitter. Urchinette, she's a writer. Anna Carey writes with the Irish Times, I think, occasionally, and a journalist, and she is involved. It's just coming back to me that she had a tweet today that I particularly thought summed it up. She said, so brilliant to see the entire country and much of the world cheering a woman for being strong and skilled, full stop, and a total badass. That kind of sums her up. There's something about her, isn't there, Michele? She's just an extraordinary, inspiring person. And you know, when you see her in interviews, she comes across with this, you know, real sort of humility. There's a lovely article as well in the Irish Independent today, which was obviously prepared and ready to publish within minutes of the victory, but it is an article which basically, you know, says this lady is a role model. She's a role model for men and for women, not just in Ireland but around the world.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's just, you know, it's amazing to see the reactions. I mean, it's just, you know, it's not just an Irish thing. It's an international thing. Yeah. And it's absolutely It's just been amazing to watch the reactions. But come on, let's move on to other things.
Let's move on to technology.
Well, this is not a sports podcast, Colin.
No, it's not. But she's just a class act, and we love you, Katie. So we'll just leave it at that. But seeing as we're talking about Olympics and online coverage and that, RTE, as we said, you know, I don't know if you saw what happened today on the RTE.ie website. You probably did when you went there, Michaela. It seems that they basically took everything offline except for the Olympic stream that would carry Katie Taylor's Olympic final bout today. They had a message up to say that normal service would resume. They were saying that it wasn't the fault of RTE servers, the streaming problems that had occurred previously, but you know, I mean, and they talked about having got additional cloud resources. I don't know, did you read this today on the RTE website? Did you see that message? That
no,
was
I didn't.
There?
I didn't notice that. Because when I went straight to the, I went straight to the stream page on the RTE site because I had it.
Yeah.
I won't say bookmarked. It was in my history.
Yeah.
So I went straight there, and you know, I got onto the HD stream at around 3 o'clock.
I have it here. Yeah, I have it here in front of me. Actually, what happened to me was when I went to RTE.ie, it went straight to Olympics.RTE.ie. And that's where I got the stream. Now, it's actually going to run that stream, so I'm going to pause that stream right there. But it says, due to an ongoing issue with RTE.ie servers, this is the note that's up on Olympics.RTE.ie. Due to an ongoing issue with RTE.ie servers, we have created this dedicated Olympic streaming webpage. This step has been taken following an outage yesterday during the Katie Taylor fight. The outage was due to an issue unrelated to RTE.ie's streaming capacity. The content you see on this page is being hosted on external cloud servers while this issue is being rectified. Service to RTE.ie, RTE.ie/sport and RTE player will resume this evening. We sincerely apologise for the interruption to service. So they're kind of saying we're working on this, but it's not our fault. I'm not sure what they're actually saying there, or what do you make of it being the hosting expert.
Look, I mean, you know, the thing is this. I mean, the sheer demand from people to view that online. I mean, it's 2012. You know, the demands for a lot of these services, the sheer volume of traffic. I mean, go back to having a look at, you know, the amount of traffic that's been pushed over HEANet. And that, if you compare that to the traffic going across INEX and other networks in Ireland, you know, even a couple of years back. I mean, the traffic's been growing constantly. I mean, if you look at, we had a conversation earlier this week with one of the telephone companies about, you know, bandwidth and, you know, data bundles and all that kind of thing. I mean, it's a totally different conversation you're having with them now compared to the conversation we're having even 2 or 3 years ago. So, I mean, I'd say, look, they did a very good job. I didn't have any serious issues with the stream. And, you know, to provide that kind of huge spike, it's not easy. And technically, it's a challenge.
It's a huge challenge. And it's probably difficult to predict the kind of Katie Taylor effect as well, you know, that because you are talking about something extraordinary, without a doubt. There's nothing in recent memory, for example, to compare that to. The last time there was this kind of national devotion to a particular event, we didn't have the amount of people online, and we didn't have the demand for online streaming that we do now.
No, I mean it's you know, it's a totally different thing. I mean, I look at say my own usage or the usage of, you know, people even in the office. I mean, okay, we're probably a little bit geekier than some, but you know. We're all going around the place we're on the Wi-Fi network in the office. We're using our iPhones and other smartphones around the place. People are going to meetings with other colleagues, and some of them might bring laptops. Others are bringing iPads.
Yeah.
I mean, my business partner doesn't send me emails at times. He emails me notes from his iPad. You know, this kind of thing. It's a, you know, the level of kind of mobility and everything else has changed dramatically.
Yeah. I'm looking at an article. I'll post a link to this. It's in the Irish Times. The headline is RTE says online coverage of Olympics has been a success. Now, I was hoping there'd be actual figures in here to quote, but if there are, I can't quite see them. But it looks like, yes, OK, their online coverage has been a success. OK, within the first week of coverage, there was a total of over... this is in relation to BBC, I think... had 29 million requests for video content across bbc.co.uk/sport. We'll post a link to this. People can browse it for themselves. But the other story which I'm kind of interested in and related to this is from the Irish Independent, published actually in the last few hours, Gordon Deegan reporting that the that RTE are reporting that apps and player have doubled their mobile revenue. Their mobile revenue, I guess, is what it is. A doubling of mobile revenues from its online mobile apps and increasing popularity of the RTE player contributed to RTE's publishing and commercial arm increasing its after-tax profits by 47% last year to 1.36 million euros. It's only a drop in comparison to RTE's overall budget, and indeed in comparison to RTE's deficit, Michele. But it's impressive, and it's a trend that can't be argued with, really, is it?
Well, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, it's like, you know, we had Francesco on talking about mobile, and you know, the and GoMobi, and you know, this the entire kind of mobile web in all its permutations. A couple of months back, and you know, this is what's happening more and more and more. I mean, you look at your Google stats for any site that's getting any reasonable level of traffic these days, you're going to see a lot of people coming in using some kind of mobile device. And if you can convert that into revenue, well, that's what you need to do. I mean, the problem for some companies, as we've discussed in the past, is that the likes of Facebook has been having terrible problems monetizing it.
That's right. Go ahead. Yeah.
So, I mean, the one of the articles that I posted earlier, that was sometime last week, was how Facebook are looking at putting more intrusive advertising on the mobile platform. I mean, basically, at the moment, there's nothing on the mobile platform in terms of monetization. Maybe the odd promoted post, but that's about it. So now they're looking at actually pushing more ads out onto mobile. This is something they're going to have to do. I mean, they have to make money for their investors. They can't have, you know, let's say 30 or 40% of the traffic, whatever it is at the moment, or will be in a year or two's time, not paying in inverted commas.
Stock price down around $20 now at the moment. There's, I suppose, disappointment. The honeymoon is definitely over. It didn't last. It only lasted, I think, a matter of days in relation to Facebook. But the big concern, you've said it, is in relation to revenue, is in relation to the, I suppose, Facebook has grown very fast, but even faster than the growth of Facebook has been the growth of mobile. And they're behind the curve on that now, Michele, aren't they, really?
Well, this is it. I mean, but then again, I mean, look, let's call a spade a spade. I mean, so are we. I mean, as a company.
So is everyone, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is this, is that, you know, it's one of those things, you know, for us, for example, we've got, you know, a whole load of things in the pipeline in terms of new slash revamped version of our website. And one of the things we're obviously going to have to do is make it more mobile friendly. Mm. And people have been asking us to be able to make certain things more mobile friendly over the last couple of years, and it's been growing and growing. And, you know, to be honest, it's just a matter of time, and, you know, we've been rolling out other things for our users, but haven't had time to actually roll things out for ourselves.
Looking at the looking very briefly at that RTE mobile revenue story again on the Irish Independent. If you look down at the bottom of that story, Michele, there's another telling thing there, because this is in relation to RTE commercial enterprises, of which the apps and player are a part. But so too, RTE commercial enterprises is also the arm of RTE that publishes the RTE guide, and it's a little footnote in that article as well, which is, of course, is the printed TV guide that comes out every week. The returns confirm that the circulation of the RTE guide last year declined from 84,000 to 74,000. That's significant, really. And Michele, I can't remember the last time I bought the RTE guide.
Well, we buy it at Christmas.
Yes.
I think that's the kind of thing that a lot of people do. It's like you buy the RTE guide at Christmas. Mm. You'll buy the Irish Times, because there's always those kind of end-of-year wrap-ups and all those quizzes and other things in it. And there's a few other publications that, that you buy towards the end of the year that you normally wouldn't buy.
But let's talk about that. You buy the Irish Times for the end of the year. Do you buy the Irish Times for the rest of the year?
Me personally?
Yes.
No.
No.
No, me personally, no. I mean,
it used to be my daily treat once upon a time, Michaela. I got hugely into the habit of reading the Irish Times in particular when I was in college. Later on, when I was delighted that I had a commute to work on a bus and didn't have to drive, because it meant I used to literally pick up my paper in the morning, have a read of it, have a little nap, and then arrive into work. It was a lovely, leisurely age. You know, we had sort of horses and carts and things in those days as well. You know, it was back before
we... You're making yourself out to be way older than me.
But Michaela, I know I'm talking about the mid-90s, but you know what I'm talking about in a way, is that, in fact, even back in those days, I remember the Irish Times Online was a new thing coming in around then. And I remember occasionally, if I didn't get the paper in the morning, I'd pick a few stories from the Irish Times in the evening, print them off on the work printer. This was my little office supplies theft, I suppose. And I was robbing the Irish Times of the cover price as well and the circulation figures, because then I'd read the printouts on the way home. But still, I preferred the paper. But we have a much different experience now. For a while, I used to buy the Irish Times at a weekend, Michaela. I don't even do that now. I'm still consuming their content, but I'm doing it online.
I think that's probably what a lot of people are doing. I mean, my mother, for example, she reads a load of different publications. I mean, I know this because she forwards me links to various articles,
or
forwards me entire articles depending on the publication. And, you know, if you look at the way people are doing things, like you see people sharing content on Twitter, sharing content on Facebook, I think we do interact quite differently. I mean, okay, say, for example, when you were college, you might have bought the Irish Times, but don't forget, you'd only been paying a fraction of the cover price.
Yeah. You'd have been,
if it was selling for, let's say, I don't know, how much was the Irish Times back then? Maybe 50 pence for a pound? I mean, I actually can't remember. But I mean, I remember in the college bookshop, you were paying a special student price, which was a fraction of it. I mean, you remember Freshers' Week, all those things. They
gave
you free copies. But I think, you know, this is the thing. I mean, I still get dead trees delivered to me on a regular basis. I mean, today was what I got my delivery of Time magazine. Mm. I'll probably guess Wired magazine should turn up at some point soon. I get National Geographic, and then I get a few other publications that we run ads in.
Yeah.
And the reason I still get the physical ones is because it's just easier to kind of carry them around. You can take them to places that you might not want to take an iPad or a Kindle or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm bad with paper, Michaela, and I welcome our new digital lifestyle, really, to be honest with you. An example for me, probably the only hard copy dead tree newspaper that I buy now at the moment is Gaelscéal, which is the Irish language weekly paper, which I'm interested in reading, you know, for all kinds of reasons on a weekly basis. But to be honest with you, I'd much prefer if I could pay them a subscription and get it as an app, or get it in some kind of an easily browsable format on an iPhone, on my Android phone, or on an iPad or something like that as well. Coming back to RTE, talking about, you know, the RTE News Now, for example, app, which is available on Android and an iPhone, is probably the top app. It's my wife's favourite app, without a shadow of a doubt, and it's a daily thing for her. And this is how she consumes RTE content, and she appreciates that content. And she, you know, watches the ads or whatever that are put in with it, but she doesn't watch the 9 o'clock news anymore.
Yeah, but that's, you know, people, you know, consume things in different ways.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, like, for me, for example, I just, looking now, okay, for example, The Wired iPad app is telling me that the August 2012 Wired is available. It's 323 megabytes to download.
Mm.
Now, let's deal with practical problems. Okay, sure. For me here, I'm on a fast connection.
I've got oodles of bandwidth, no problem. But, you know, somebody living out in the sticks, like you, you know, 320-odd megs of download, that's going to take a while.
It's not going to take that long. Might take, you know, yeah, it might take a while. Might take 20 minutes, I guess. Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things, you know, that it's fine, you know, with some of the lighter apps, but I mean, you know, 300 plus megs for a single magazine. I mean, that's a lot to download. I mean, sure, it's really cool. I mean, the wired app on the iPad is fantastic. I love it.
Let's get back to Facebook, Michele, and it looks like they may have found a solution to their revenue generation problems and something which might appease their shareholders. They're going to do gambling. Did you see that?
Yeah, well, you mentioned this earlier. Yeah. I mean, sure,
what they're doing? So right now, I mean, you can play. I think you can. There's probably Facebook apps you can play poker on and things like that. You cannot do gambling for money on Facebook in the United States or indeed anywhere else in the world, with the exception of the jurisdiction in which they are trialing and piloting this at the moment, which is in the UK. So I suppose, given the fact that there's a different kind of regulatory environment in Britain, and similar indeed to the one that is in Ireland, gambling is a much more contentious issue, and it's kind of more, you know, there's different situations in relation to gambling from state to state and city to city indeed in the United States. So
no, it's illegal online, full stop.
Oh, it's illegal online, No, what I was talking about in terms of the likes of Las Vegas and Atlantic City and places like that.
In the physical world, yeah, there's differences. But online in the US is completely forbidden.
Across the board, federal law, is it?
Yeah, can't do it.
Okay, that's interesting. Whereas you can do it with the likes of Paddy Power and Betfair and sites like that that operate in Ireland and the UK. And so they're trying this out, I guess, at least in the UK. And, you know, it might be, obviously, if it becomes worth their while, they might lobby for changes in the US law. There's all kinds of, I'm linking, for example, to an article in the Telegraph. The headline there is, Facebook is gambling with its members' trust. Facebook's move into gambling is a distasteful one, which prioritises commercial gain over user benefit, writes Emma Barnett. What do you think of that for a statement?
Facebook's a commercial entity.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of the things that, you know, you see these people getting up in arms about the way companies do things because they're concerned about the users. I mean, the thing is, unless Facebook starts charging its users, and they'd have to charge them quite a lot per head, how do people expect Facebook and Twitter and a lot of these other social networks and services that are free, how else do they expect them to keep running? How do they expect them to fund their staff? Now, the thing is, you know, introducing gambling, okay, sure, it can be a bit of a can of worms, but as long as they do it in compliance with UK law, or if they introduce it over here in the UK, with Irish law, I don't see the problem.
Ultimately, it's going to be regulated by law, is what you're pointing out, Michele, and it's up to society to decide what kind of rules they want to put in place. I think, though, that this could create a backlash, and this, in fact, could cause legislators to look again at perhaps some of the laws that are there. In fact, already in relation to that, a Wicklow, County Wicklow TD, Fine Gael's Simon Harris is quoted in thejournal.ie today, raising concerns about the new Facebook gambling app. He's joined with a number of parent groups in voicing his concern about the new Facebook app, Bingo Frenzy. So far, the app, which has been created by Gamesys and not by Facebook, is only available in the UK, but Harris questioned when it'll be available in Ireland. Now, I'm just actually, the name there, Bingo Frenzy, I'm just going to click on that and see, is it, okay, that's linking to a BBC story on the matter. But I don't know, if you look again at the article in the Telegraph there, they've they've put side by side two pictures at the top of that article, Michele. One is of Moshi Monsters, which is something my kids are into. I have no idea what it's about, but it's a cool, furry cartoon character type things. And beside it is the ad for Bingo Frenzy, and it's F-R-I-E-N-D FNDZY is how they spell frenzy. And it's, I think, described there as the first real cash gambling app on Facebook. But if you look at the cute and furry little floppy-haired characters underneath the Bingo Frenzy logo there, Michele, it does look rather disturbingly like it's designed to appeal perhaps to kids or, I don't know, what do you think?
Meh. I mean, to be perfectly honest, it's like they look like Angry Birds practice.
They do actually, don't they? They do look like cute and furry little Angry Birds. I mean, I got to say,
ultimately, Colin, there's going to be people who hate anything that Facebook does. It doesn't matter what they do, they'll hate us.
No, there's something else at play here, Michele, and this is where I reveal myself to be a horrible killjoy who's totally out of step with the mood of the age in which he lives in this country. But I know that there's, for example, there are websites, or I know, for example, that, you know, having a flutter, having a punt, having a little gamble on the horse race or the Grand National or whatever it might be, betting on the cover the colour of Kate Middleton's socks or whatever it might be is something which is considered to be, you know, a bit of harmless fun. And in general, I agree it is a bit of harmless fun. Personally, I don't like gambling myself, Michele. It's something that I have an aversion to because I think it's probably my own personality. I think the pleasure of winning when you do occasionally win, it never really compensates, in my view, my own personal view, for the I suppose the occasional the fact that you have to actually stake money and you usually lose that money. Basically, I'm a misery guts, Michele, and an old killjoy.
Well, no, okay, look, let's just slow down there.
Yeah, go on.
How? Answer me this.
Yes.
How is one of your children going to be able to place bets, in other words, using real money, online?
Okay.
They don't have access to funds.
No, I agree. And no, children aren't going to be able to do that, right? But what is going to happen is that adults who perhaps have, and again, you see, Michele, there's no logic to my argument because, for example, I enjoy alcohol, I enjoy going to pubs, right? And I'm aware that because we have a regulated alcohol trade and things like that in this country and in the society that we live in, I wouldn't like to live in a society where alcohol was prohibited, for example. But I do understand that at the same time, there are some people who have an addiction to alcohol and have a problem with it. So, you know, would I argue that alcohol should be prohibited on that basis? You know, no, I wouldn't. So I agree. What I'm saying is inconsistent here.
We're going to have to agree to disagree, Colin.
Yeah, no, all I'm saying to you is, Michele, is that I and let me boil it down, right? I would say that there is a risk here that people who are, that Facebook will basically continue to provide a free service, which the likes of you and I and people who perhaps don't have a susceptibility to developing a gambling addiction can continue to enjoy. And that service will be paid for by others who perhaps who have an unfortunate weakness and who end up, spending an unsustainable amount of their income on gambling for money with Facebook. And again, there's a couple of other things here that I think that legislators, and it's, you know, you've mentioned that, Michele, you know, the rules are the rules. I think legislators are going to look at it because I think this is going to popularise and perhaps mainstream online gambling in a way that it hasn't been done in general, that it hasn't been done, and that as a result, you know, it's one thing to go to the track, go to the racetrack, or go to play bingo or something like that, and to actually make a bet in that way. But as you and I know, Michele, what you can do in the privacy of your own home, and what you can indulge in the privacy of your own home with the support of the internet, could, I think, lead to people developing, getting into trouble and developing problems, really.
Look, we're going to have to agree to disagree. I mean, look, Colin.
Yeah.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, it's like if you want to take that through to its logical conclusion,
yes,
then you have to ban betting completely.
Yes, and ban alcohol and ban anything else that people enjoy, but that some people have a weakness for.
That's the thing. I mean,
so I agree with you. That's
the problem, because the thing is this: if you honestly expect me to believe that by putting betting on Facebook, you're suddenly going to create a whole load of of new betting addicts, then I'd have to disagree with you.
No, you're not. But you're not by putting betting on Facebook, you're not suddenly going to do anything, Michele. Would you perhaps accept that it does change things just a little bit? It does make online betting a little bit more mainstream and introduce some people. For example, some people have an addiction problem when it comes to Facebook games as it is, and we all have a tendency to, you know, play too much Angry Birds or whatever the latest game or app is at times and indulge in that. Would you not accept that this may subtly at least perhaps be part of a change which will see online gambling become more mainstream to a point that it's going to perhaps attract the attention of legislation and legislators and perhaps need some kind of a tweaking in how this is regulated?
What was the question? Look, this is going round in circles.
Okay, the question very simply is this, Michele. I think that this is not any sudden or huge big change in anything, but I do think that it is going to, it is something that's going to have to be watched.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, meh. Yeah. Let's move on. What are we going to talk about now?
What are we going to talk about now? How the two of us have issues understanding each other at times.
We sometimes do. Let's talk about the Black Knight special offers this week, Michele. You're still offering special offers on .co and .me.
We announced this a couple of weeks back, and it's the main offer that we're pushing at the moment. So if you get our Maximus hosting package for either Windows or Linux, you can get a .co or a .me domain name for free for the first year, which is a pretty good saving. And if you don't feel like going down the route of getting the Maximus, which is our, you know, most generous shared hosting plan, if you were to get a Minimus on an annual subscription, you get a reduced price on either .co or .me domain name. So you can get a .me for $4.99 for the first year or a .co for $7.99 for the first year. Obviously, all prices excluding VAT, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's a good saving. It's a good deal. So if you're starting up, I mean, .co... Crystal was talking with us about that recently. You know, there's a lot more names available in .co than there would be in .com. And the same can be said for .me. I mean, both domain names extensions are being used by a lot of the cool startups. And, you know, you're seeing more and more people using these alternative extensions. So I think, you know, it's a good offer.
Very good. Find out more on blog.blacknight.com.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
You're listening to Technology.ie, the podcast from the website Technology.ie with Conor Muinichon and the CEO of Black Knight, that's Michele Nealon. Michele, you've been busy blogging this week. I want to talk about some of the things you've drawn attention to. An interesting story in relation to the Irish Data Protection Commissioner and the three strikes case. Remind us again what that's about.
Well, if you remember a few years back, I mean, this is one of these stories that keeps going on and on and on and on. You think you've seen the end of it, and then it comes back around again. the music industry, represented by IRMA, took Aircom to court. Basically, this is around online piracy, claiming that, you know, that Aircom's DSL users were breaching copyright, downloading music illegally, etc., etc., etc. And the court case went on for a while, and then they reached a settlement out of court, so there was never actually a proper judgment in an Irish court. And the agreement that was reached was with this concept of the three strikes, or the graduated response thing, where IRMA would report infringements to Aircom. And if you infringed on multiple occasions, then you start getting letters, and there's always the threat as well of cutting people off completely. Interestingly, actually, since I posted that, there's also been some talk about similar legislation in France, where the French ministry is going, look, you know, this is costing us millions and it doesn't actually seem to be doing anything. So the thing that's been going round and round and round about this case in the Irish courts and involving the Data Privacy Commissioner is, you know, is the data, the usage and everything else, is that going to cause privacy issues? And, you know, we thought that to pay, but now it's come out again. So
the Data Protection Commissioner got involved, and they said, so Aircom agreed this settlement out of court, as you said, with the copyright holders, and then the Data Protection Commissioner said, hang on a second, you cannot necessarily give this information. This is a breach of privacy, essentially, telling people, or telling the music rights organisations the details of people who had a particular IP address at a particular time. Isn't that it?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I mean, that's it in essence.
So they issued an order or a notice ordering Aircom to stop doing that, and then Aircom, the music companies actually went to the High Court then in June of this year and quashed the commissioner's notice. That High Court order is now being appealed by the Data Protection Commissioner, and they're also asking the courts to rule in relation to European law in relation to this as well. So we're kind of getting close to this has been referred or appealed by the Data Commissioner to the Supreme Court. So we're actually getting close to this is what courts do, Michele, and we get clarification as to whether or not this kind of order, this kind of settlement between Aircom and the music companies is actually legal at all.
Well, this is it. I mean, the problem, and again, this is something that's come up within other areas. I mean, you've had the SOPA, you've had all these other legislative moves, both in Ireland and overseas. You know, getting that balance right between protecting rights holders' rights and entitlements, which do need protection, and protecting users, and, you know, protecting users' rights. But I mean, not just privacy, but rights in general. And, you know, the thing is, the rights holders, in this case IRMA, which represents the big music companies, they're fighting tooth and nail from one standpoint. I mean, unfortunately, for those of us who are actually users of the internet in Ireland, we have the Data Protection Commissioner fighting our corner. This is to be continued, and it's not just what's happening in Ireland, Colin. It's happening elsewhere. The Hadopi law in France is under discussion over there at the moment. And, you know, it keeps on cropping up. It's not going to go away.
And, you know, something, that balance, and as you point out, Michele, there's a balance, there's rights on all sides, and that balance is actually summed up in relation to the Data Commissioner's request to the Supreme Court to refer certain questions to the European Court of Justice for preliminary ruling, and I'm quoting from the Irish Times article. He's seeking its opinion on whether the Aircom policy is compatible with European law, quote, having regard to the balance it strikes or purports to strike between the protection of the intellectual property rights enjoyed by the record companies on one hand and the fundamental rights of customers to protection of their personal information and the freedom to impart and receive information. We'll put a link to the story into the blog that goes with this podcast on technology.ie. I see as well that they're looking for an award in relation to costs. The Data Protection Commissioner is looking to have his costs paid by, I think, IRMA in relation to this as well. So that could be interesting. We'll come back to it, no doubt. You were blogging, Michele, about Wi-Fi on Irish buses as well.
Another one of these things.
Bus Éireann are claiming that Wi-Fi is available on their buses, but somebody commented on your blog post and said they may have a Wi-Fi sticker on them, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it works.
Well, I mean, come on, this is always going to be the case. No, I mean, the thing is that the Bus Éireann has been rolling out Wi-Fi services, and they announced a few days ago that they were adding it to more routes. Because the thing is, they're playing catch-up in some respects, because quite a few of the private bus companies, like I see them at Dublin Airport, if you're in the coach park in Dublin Airport and you turn on Wi-Fi on your phone or your laptop, you'll see all the SSIDs for the various buses. And a lot of them are open, so you can actually leech their Wi-Fi. So, you know, they're Bus Éireann is playing catch up a little bit. I mean, Irish Rail has rolled out a Wi-Fi, I think, on some of the intercity services. And there was another story, was reported by Damien initially, that Aer Lingus are also looking at rolling out Wi-Fi on some of their flights.
That's right. But, you know, and I don't commute as much as I used to, Michaela, but at one point I think I was on buses or trains at least three times a month. And, you know, on, say, on trips to Dublin and that. And one of the what I began to feel actually was that, you know, I would tend to have a dongle or some kind of a data plan on my phone, something like that I would use. I began to be less inclined to seek out Wi-Fi either on public transport or indeed in coffee shops and places like that. And do you know what I'm more inclined to look for nowadays, Michaela, is a PowerPoint.
Oh, yeah, that is one of the... That is one of the major issues I have.
It is, isn't it?
I mean, as somebody who travels quite a bit, there's very few airports that I've been in where there's a decent number of PowerPoints available. I mean, you'll go into an airport lounge, could be anywhere, any country in Europe on the face of the planet, and most of them, they just don't have enough PowerPoints. I think the only one I was in the last year that had enough was, I think it was Atlanta, that had an absolutely fantastic setup. They had PowerPoints all over the place. So every single person could sit down and charge their devices, no problem. But no, I mean, you go into a lot of the airport lounges and you can't get anything. It's terrible, actually.
Loads to talk about this week on the podcast, Michaela. Very briefly, two more blog posts you have there. What's this about the Nike letter?
Yeah, this is one I saw earlier this evening. It's an interesting one because it's something, you know, I'm fortunately, I don't have any relatives. I do have close friends who have, you know, children and everything else that have, they're afflicted by various health issues. And this is one of these things that kind of started off really, really small and has grown very, very quickly. The 16-year-old guy in the States, a guy called Matthew Walzer, suffers from cerebral palsy. And he loves his Nike runners. And the Nike runners are fine. They give him plenty of support, and he's very happy with them, except for one problem. Because he's got limited motor function, I think it's his hands or something, he has difficulty putting on his Nike runners without getting assistance from somebody else, so either parents or a friend or whatever. So he wrote an open letter to the CEO of Nike, begging that they would introduce a line that was easier for people with restricted abilities to put on the shoes. But what made it interesting was that it was picked up by Nice Kicks, which is a very popular site for people who are into runners. Hey, there's an entire subculture. And they've gone and taken this to the next level. And what they'll do is for everybody who retweets the blog post and the video, they're going to send out these personalized, with your actual Twitter name or Twitter username on it, to Nike CEO, this great big these orange postcards, and they're aiming to fill a United States Postal Service van with these and to send them to Nike HQ.
Sounds very cool. You can find out more about it. The hashtag is #NikeLetter, and there's a nice blog post there that Michaela has on technology.ie in relation to that. You also blogged about Realex payments. They've announced some growth in recent time as well, haven't they?
I wouldn't say some growth, Colin. I would say staggering growth. It's really impressive. I mean, they pushed out a press release yesterday, I think it was. Was it yesterday or the day before? Sorry, this week's been rather busy. It was yesterday afternoon. And talking about how their revenues are up 28%, transaction volumes up 44%. I mean, that's massive growth.
It's true. There is no recession online.
Well, there might not be, but I mean, it's impressive.
It certainly
is. I mean,
the
figures that they put out there, their client base, now this one blew me away, 74% increase.
In customers?
4%.
Wow.
Very so they're impressive. Now processing 1.5 billion euro a month.
Very impressive. Hats off, and take a round of applause, and take a bow, Column Line and Relax Payments. And you can read more about that as well on technology.ie. Now, Conor O'Neill is pissed at Twitter. I want to talk about that in a minute, Michele. I want to talk about the Curiosity rover. Let's just talk very briefly about that. That was cool, or at least the computer animated simulation of what this would actually look like as this amazing sky crane thing landed the Curiosity rover the size of a small car onto the surface of Mars. Did you watch that video? I presume you did, the 7 minutes of terror as it was described.
No, I didn't actually.
Oh, well, you should. I'll send you a link to it, Michele. You can watch it again.
No, it's one of these things that, to be perfectly honest with you, there were so many people tweeting about it. Facebook updates and everything else was completely swamped. I was just like, oh my God, I haven't got time.
It was funny. It was on, this was happening live at 5:30 on Bank Holiday Monday morning, our time, or 6:30, I think, our time, Bank Holiday Monday morning. The thing about it was, Michele, that looking at it the night before I watched this video and I thought, this is exciting, this is going to be cool. I'm not going to stay up or get up early to watch it. But when I got up at around maybe 9 o'clock on Monday morning, the first thing I did was go online and see, you know, what happened. Did it land safely on Mars? It did. There's lots of excitement. Click here to see what happened when it landed on Mars. And you go along and you find you click on the video, and what you end up seeing is a whole load of guys in a NASA mission control hugging each other and crying and cheering and clapping. And you know, that's the cool video. That's what people who got up to watch this live actually ended up watching. It's because naturally enough, it was cool. This couldn't happen this couldn't be controlled, for example, directly from Mars. There's a 14-minute time lag at the speed of light from us to Mars, and this thing took 7 minutes to land. So as they put it themselves in the video that I'll send you the link to, by the time we actually get word that it has touched the atmosphere on the top of Mars, you know, the top of the Martian atmosphere, this 7 minutes of terror is beginning from that point of view. But actually, it will already have been either alive or dead on the surface by that stage for 7 minutes. Look, it's very cool and we're really impressed. But as I say, the most impressive part from the point of view of home entertainment in relation to all of this is this simulation they did describing how this would actually happen. But that was cool. Let's talk about Conor O'Neill. He's written a fantastic blog post today titled "Why I've Pledged Money to App.net and Why You Should Too." Twitter, he's had enough of it. From a developer's point of view, Michele, he said, he's had enough of it. You can't trust this platform. They're going to, you know, they're clawing back. They're stealing the thunder and choking off the air from the third party companies who built their businesses on the Twitter platform. And instead, it's turning into something totally different. And it should be, he says, a utility. It should be like the phone company or the electricity or the water. It's not. They're turning themselves into an entertainment platform. They're taking back control of the user interface in relation to all of this. They want people to go to the web page, not to use apps such as TweetDeck or whatever. And he says that we need something different. We should pay for it like any other utility, and that's why he's pledged to this app.net. What do you think?
I read that this morning. I mean, I think you actually sent me a link to that about 5 minutes after I'd read it, and I just went, oh, for God's sake. Okay, do I understand where he's coming from? Yes. Do I agree with him? No. The thing is this, it's like, I think he I don't think he even realizes himself if you actually look through it. I mean, the problem with Twitter, the problem with Google, the problem with Facebook, the problem with Bebo in the past, with Go.com years ago, with Yahoo, with all of these things is, they're where the user base are at the moment, or at that moment in time. So you can go off and launch an alternative to Twitter that respects the users this and respects the users that, and lets developers do whatever the hell they want. You know, who cares? I mean, ultimately, unless you can persuade the entire population of the planet to suddenly adopt these things, then it's not going to do anything. I mean, you'll end up
with this little niche community of users on there. And fine, if you want to reach that niche community, then maybe you need to use that service. But it's not going to have the mass appeal. It's not going to have the mass appeal, and I don't see how it could get the mass appeal.
Well, on the other hand, Michele, equally, you know, the notion that Twitter will become the de facto standard and own it all and last forever, there isn't a precedent for that. If you go back to AOL, if you go back to Thomas Edison and Direct Current and things like that, ultimately, what I'm saying, Michele, is that ultimately this probably is going to turn into some kind of a standardized service, and by which I mean microblogging in general, probably turn into something standardized, something federated or something like that, where right now Twitter owns microblogging in absolute total, in the same way that AOL owned the internet as it appeared to very many people at one point in time. But that's not going to, you know, that's not going to last forever either, Michele. Ultimately, we are going to get to some kind of an open standard situation. What do you think?
Why would we go to an open standard? Give me one good business reason why all the companies that have invested heavily in integrating with Twitter, in integrating with Facebook, in integrating with Google, integrated with Microsoft, why are they suddenly going to drop it all and go down the route of an open standard? Because, I can only think of one reason.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The only reason I can think of is if they're forced to by government.
I can think of another reason. Another reason is that at some point it becomes restrictive. At some point, let's say Twitter, who own 100% effectively of microblogging right now, at some point they feck it up, Michele. They screw it up in some way. Go ahead, yeah.
But I mean, this is the thing, Carl. Look, you know, big popular services like Gmail, for example, has got millions of users, has had outages. Twitter has had multiple outages. Facebook probably has outages from time to time. I don't actually know whether they do or not. I haven't noticed any. The only time that you've seen companies go down the route of embracing open standards was when there was a business reason for them to do it, or that they were obliged to do it.
And I understand that. And what I'm saying to you, Michele, is that ultimately I think that will happen. There will be a business reason for it. I think new technology will come along, a new way of using microblogging or of doing this stuff will come along. Twitter won't be able to do it on their own, or, you know, for some reason, people won't be satisfied with what it is. There may well be a regulatory element to it as well, in that they may be told you have to you have to provide your APIs, you have to provide a platform for people. I think that's quite likely that there will be some kind of a thing like that. And ultimately, Michele, if you look at all the big internet monopolies, they've all lost ground. At one point, it looked like, for example, that at one point, you know, nobody could ever conceive of an alternative to the Netscape browser, or indeed the Internet Explorer browser, or whatever it might have been. You know, things change. What I'm saying, I think, in a way, is that this will happen by itself. I don't think app.net or the likes of it is going to make that happen in the short term.
I just don't see. I mean, I know. Yeah, sure. If you can give them a reason, then maybe this would happen. But I'm looking at. I am looking at my Mac here. You know, the new latest version of OS X. I go into the mail, contacts, and calendars, and what do I see? I see really, really tight integration with Twitter. I see really tight integration with Google. I see tight integration with Microsoft Exchange. I've got the option to add accounts for a couple of other things. I mean, obviously iCloud, and they've got a Facebook integration that's promised on the way. I mean, the reality is that this is something that I will be able to. I can in any native app on OS X, I can share content to Flickr. I can share content
to Twitter, I'll be able to share it to other social networks that they feel that they need to add them, that they have a partnership with.
Mm-hmm.
It's so the thing is, more and more people will become more deeply embedded with these things. So I just don't see how this kind of little revolution in the corner is going to have any real tangible impact. I mean, sure, you know, I understand their frustrations, but the thing is this, is like the same people will build stuff up based around Google and other services because that's where the user base is. And they provide APIs that may or may not have all the functionality that you want, and you're able to do things using those APIs, access that user base, spread your content, get your advertising messaging, whatever it is. But you will always be at the mercy of whoever owns the network.
Mm-hmm. And the network in this case is Twitter.
So?
No, so what, that's what you're saying. I'm just summing it up there, Michele. So what?
Yeah. No.
So what you're saying really is that I suppose... Yeah, and Twitter are clawing this back in terms of the fact is that they don't want to be the back end. They don't want to be the pipes. They want to be the front page. They want to be. They don't want us to genericize microblogging. They want us to continue to call it Twitter, and that the only real microblogging experience is the Twitter experience. Yeah, I mean. Yeah, more or less, I agree with you, to be quite honest with you. Connor's frustration is coming from the point of view of a developer, and let's face it, nobody gets frustrated like developers do, because at the end of the day, they...
No, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, I understand his frustration. I just think that the reality is that, you know, it's all comes down to business. I mean, you know, a bunch of developers might go off and start playing with some new... alternative, like to this AppNet thing. Now, for example, I looked at the AppNet thing on Kickstarter, but the only way you can actually access AppNet is if you pay.
Yeah.
So when I'm not going to sign up for a service that I have no idea how good or how bad it is, what it does, what kind of functionality is available, without being able to have a play with it first. I'm not going to do that.
So you don't, yeah. So you really don't see this, you know, based on that, this isn't going to going to fly in any kind of an impressive way, at least in the, you know, as long as they're presenting it like that. Let's move on, Michele. One more thing. I'm going to very briefly mention Matt Honan, who's the Wired writer. I will put a link into this. The Wired writer who got hacked. Through his iCloud account, they were trying to get to his Twitter, actually appeared to be their goal. They phoned up Amazon.
Succeeded.
They did, yeah, and it's a kind of a nasty bit of social engineering, but you can see how it happened. Now, as far as I can see, it's a fail on Apple's part because he phoned up the hackers. First of all, I think they had his name and his date of birth, and they phoned up Amazon customer support first of all, and they said, "Sorry, can't quite remember which credit card do I have set up on your account or for Amazon?" And they gave them the last four digits of the credit card, which companies sometimes do without giving you the full number. They say it's your credit card that ends in 1234 or whatever it may be. But it turns out that a name, a date of birth, and the last four numbers of your credit card is all you need to persuade Apple support to actually reset your password. And that's what they actually did. And that's how he got into his iCloud and all of that. That looks like a fail really on Apple's part, doesn't it?
Well, it's just it's one of these things. I mean, before we started recording this evening, we touched on briefly the idea of two-factor authentication.
That's one of the things that's being touted as a result of this guy Matt's experience. People are saying, "Well, this would have solved it," but as you point out, Michele, there's some limitations to that as well.
Well, the problem with two-factor authentication is you can end up where, you know, it's a trade-off. You get greater security, but there's going to be a level of inconvenience. So, you know, which are you going to value more? Are you going to value the greater level of security, or are you going to value the convenience factor of being able to do something quickly and easily? And it's just getting that balance right with a lot of these things is very, very awkward. So take, for example, AIB, online banking. As a personal user, I can opt to have one of these little doodads that will, you know, randomly generate numbers or characters or whatever. It's an electronic thingy. I can opt to use that with my bank account. The problem is, it's something that I would need to carry around in my pocket or in my laptop case or whatever all the time. If I didn't have it and I'd enable that on my account, I wouldn't be able to do certain types of transactions. So I haven't turned it on. I'm sticking to using the slightly more old-fashioned number card thingy.
So essentially, your bank security is slightly diminished by that, but your online banking usefulness is increased by the fact that you choose not to use that gadget.
Well, it's just because of the way they've implemented it. Now, whereas say Google, for example, they have the option, if you go into your Google account, go into security settings, you can turn it on there. And what you will get is you can get a little application for your smartphone. It'll work on Android. There's a version for Android. There's a version for iPhone. There might be one for BlackBerry. I honestly don't know. And that will do the same kind of thing, a randomly generated sequence of characters, and it updates every few seconds, and you can use that. Problem with that, though, again, certain third-party services, like, say, for example, Gtalk is native, but certain third-party software that uses Gtalk can't handle the authentication properly, so you have to keep on logging back in all the time, which is a bit of a pain.
Getting back to Conor O'Neill, in fact, he was blogging, when I was looking on his blog this morning, I saw some of his other posts, and he was pointing out as well that, yeah, he has managed to implement two-factor authentication, but yeah, it runs into limitations, particularly with Google accounts, he said, on his iPad in particular. So yeah, you know, it's not always going to work, and it is going to cause complications as well.
Well, this, I mean, it's, you know, the thing is this, I suppose, it's down to education, it's making an informed decision. You know, if you know what the upside and the downside to the choice you make is, well, then fine. You know, you're doing that. You've made that choice. So, like, going back to what we were talking about originally, this entire thing about the guy's accounts being hacked and everything else. You know, it might not be a case that Apple failed or one of the other companies failed. It's just when you combine them all together, it was possible to social engineer your way into the account by getting information from different sources.
Yeah, but you know something? There's a few basic principles here that I think need to be adhered to, right? Don't reset my password if I'm unable to quote my credit card number in its entirety. Under what circumstances would I only be in possession of the last four digits of my credit card? If you're Apple or whoever, if you're the merchant, if you're the person who's holding my data, you know, if you want to sort of indicate which credit card that I'm using, sure, quote the last four digits back to me. But again, don't assume that I've authenticated myself with you if I can only quote four digits to you. And there's another thing, Michele, as well. I I've seen this recently where companies ring you up and they say, we need to get a payment from you on your phone bill or something like that. And they've rung you out of the blue and they expect you to start dealing with them straight away. I always say to them, okay, let me call you back on that, because, you know, how do I know that you actually really are the phone company?
Well, no, I'd agree with you on that one. I mean, it's an ongoing argument I had with AIB credit card services for a long time. You know, they'd ring you up. More often than not, they were ringing me on my mobile. Mm. It comes back as a number withheld. I've no idea who's ringing me. Mm-hmm. And I said, look, can't you just set something up on your phone system so that, you know, I can actually know that it's coming from AIB? And if I see AIB on my phone, then I know to answer it. Now, coming back to the thing about the credit card digits, the reality is for a lot of people with PCI DSS, you cannot see the full card number.
What's PCI DSS?
It's the payment standards. It's the payment standards for security. So, for example, if I were to log in to a lot of services, I will not be able to see the full credit card number as I've entered it. I'll be able to see enough information to know which card it is.
Yeah.
Not enough information. If somebody were, let's say, for example,
I'm saying I'm the customer, Michele, and I have the card in my wallet. I can see the full. I can see the full number. What you're saying to me, though, is that that's no good to the guy on the other end because he can't see the full number. It doesn't matter if I quote the full number. He can't verify it anyway. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, he can't see it. Okay. He can only see the last four digits.
Yeah.
That's a reality. Now, I don't disagree with you that the entire authentication should be done more intelligently. I mean, if I can't, it shouldn't just be one piece of information or another piece of information that's far too easy for somebody to get. I mean, finding out somebody's date of birth, their home address, their telephone number, these kind of things, they're pretty easy to do. Other things that can be harder to do, I don't know. I mean, you look at some of the security questions that some places ask you for. Some of those things can be a lot harder for somebody who doesn't know you very, very well or know you intimately to be able to come up with that information. So, I mean, I don't know. There is no simple solution there, but I won't agree with you on the credit card thing there. I mean, the person on the other end of the phone won't be able to see the full credit card.
Fair.
Like, I'm here on my Amazon account, and I can see two payment methods. There's American Express and there's a Visa, and all I can see here is the last four digits of each card and the expiry dates.
Fair enough, Michele. But again, whether or not that is an appropriate, I'm sure you can think of better ways for the company to decide whether or not they're going to to reset somebody's password or not. Because again, essentially. Those four digits are something that's very easy to get. Anyway, look, it's we're not going to solve it tonight, Michele. It is being debated worldwide as we speak, as indeed Katie Taylor is being feted and celebrated worldwide as well. Michele, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for joining us on technology.ie this week. And we won't do it next week, but we'll be back again the week after.
Sorry, I couldn't resist, Connor. I had to play that again.
Let it play.
Good talking to you, Colin.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.